Welcome to Torti Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Mem Dalid, Chapter 44. There are waves of ideas in Yirmiyahu that fit with the time period that Yirmiyahu is speaking to. In the time of Yoshiyahu, Yirmiyahu speaks against idolatry, not just the practice itself, but the way it makes God feel, the lack of ethics that it promotes in society, but he also does speak about the practice itself. Yirmiyahu and Yoshiyahu were on a mission to cleanse their country from the hideous practice that the idols were and that they promoted. The people responded to Yirmiyahu by going underground, by hiding their idols, by bifurcating their existence, a Jew in the street and an idolater at home. Sometimes, when he confronted them directly, they lied to his face. Sometimes they said, "We can't do it. No ash. It's too hard to change." In the time of Jehoiakim, Yirmiyahu didn't stop speaking about idolatry completely, but it was much less. Much of the idolatry had been eradicated, and instead he focused on corruption, on bribery, usury, and oppression. He railed against the ritualistic practices of the people that had no meaning, including their worship at the Beit HaMikdash, and he wondered what would get them to believe that the punishment would actually come. Without the protection of the king, he is brutalized by the people and thwarted by the false prophets. In the later part of Jehoiakim's time, and in the time of Tzidkiyahu, Yirmiyahu focuses on his political nevuot, begging the people and the kings to submit to Babylonia and acknowledge Hashem's presence in the geopolitical movements of their lives and their politics. All the while, he was building a new community in Babylonia and encouraging them to fix the wrongs of the society that they had left behind in Israel. Now, suddenly, in Egypt, it is as if we have gone back in time. Idolatry is once again rampant. Yirmiyahu gives a prophecy to this last remaining community that could have been said in Perek Bet, Perek Dalid, Hey, Vav. The people have regressed. It is as if Yoshiyahu had never been born or lived. Says Yirmiyahu in verse 2, Ko amar Hashem Tzvaakot Elokei Yisrael, Atem re'item et kol hara'a asher heveti al Yushalayim, val kol arei Yuda, v'hinam charba hayom hazeh, ve'em bahem yoshev. You people have witnessed all the terrible things that I've done to Yerushalayim and the cities of Judea. You look how desolate they are. There's nobody living there. And then he continues, I'm reading from verse 7. Va'ata, ko amar Hashem Elokei Tzvaakot, Elokei Yisrael. Lama atem osim ra'a gdola al nashotechem, lachrit lachem ish v'isha olel v'yonek mitoch Yuda, levilti otir lachem sheirit. Why are you doing the same thing? Why are you doing these terrible sins that led to the Chorban? Do you want to not have any continuity? Do you want to cut off man, woman, child, babies from the land of Judah? Do you want to have no remnant? Why are you doing this? Verse 8, Lahachiseni. You are angering me with the works of your hand. You go and you make sacrifices to other gods in the land of Mitzrayim that you went to live there. You're going to become cut off because of this. You're going to become a curse to all and an embarrassment in all of the nations of the world. Yirmiyahu says to them, I don't understand. We moved on from this. We got rid of the idolatry, and also you were punished for it. You want to go back in time? You want to be punished again? You came to Mitzrayim not just to escape the ravages of war, but I see now, says Yirmiyahu, you came to Mitzrayim because you kind of liked that way of life, that easygoing, easy, non-ethical way of life that comes with worshiping idols. It's attractive to you. You're here because you like it. Ha-shachachtem et ra'ot avotechem, says Yirmiyahu in verse 9. Did you forget all the terrible things that your fathers did? That Ra'ot Malchei Yudah, it just happened. All the terrible things that the kings of Yudah did, and all of the Ve'et Ra'ot Nashav, Ve'et Ra'ot Chem, the evil of their wives, and your own evil deeds? It was so It was such a short time ago. Ve'atra'ot nisheichem, asher asu be'eretz Yehudah ubechutzot Yerushalayim, all the terrible things that your own wives did in the land of Yehudah and in the courtyards of Yerushalayim. And you know what's going to happen to you, says Yirmiyahu? Lo yeh palit v'sarid. You're not going to have one remainder. No one will escape l'shevet Yehudah, you, the remnant of Yehudah. You're going to be completely destroyed. Habaim lagursham be'eretz Mitzrayim. Those of you who came to live in the land of Mitzrayim. V'lashuv eretz Yehudah asher hema minas'im et nafshatam lashuv lashevet sham ki lo yashuvu ki im pleitim. You say you want to go back. You don't want to go back. He emphasizes over and over, you've come lagur be'eretz Mitzrayim. You've come to live here in Eretz Mitzrayim. You're settling here. This is what you like. And Yirmiyahu screams at the people, do you realize that you're starting the cycle again? We're ending the book. You're at the beginning of the book. We just went through this. We were answered by Chorban, by Galut, by a lot of needless death and destruction. And here you are in Egypt. In the beginning of your history, you went back to your slavery and you went back to your enslavement. Exactly what Yirmiyahu said in Perek Bet, Ha'eved Yisrael, Im Yelid Bayit Hu, Madua Haya Levaz. Is Yisrael a slave? Are they a slave who's born into the house? Why are they acting like it if they're not? Why are they enslaving themselves to other nations? Why are they taking on other nations' God? Why are they giving up their honor and who they are as B'nai Yisrael? And Yirmiyahu says here, look at you. You started again. And you started in the land of your slavery, and that's what you've become, and you chose it. It's like history has never happened. The people take a big, deep breath in Pasuk 15, and they say back to Yirmiyahu, Ve'anu et Yirmiyahu kol ha'anashim hayodim. Kol ha'anashim, all the people say to Yirmiyahu, Hayodim ki mekatarot nesheim le'eluhim acherim. They know that their wives are actually serving other gods. V'chol hanashim ha'omdim kahal gadol. And all of those wives that are actually serving the idols, because it really was more the place of the women to do these actions. Kahal gadol, it's a great congregation. V'chol ha'am ha'yoshvim be'eretz Yisrael be'patros le'mor. And they all turn to Yirmiyahu and they say in verse 16, Hadavar asher dibarta elenu b'shem Hashem, the thing that you say to us in the name of Hashem, einenu shomim elecha, we will not listen to you. Never before have people say this. They say, "We are a liar. You're not speaking in the name of Hashem." They say the false prophets say otherwise. They say to him, "Oh no, it's not really true. We really aren't worshiping idols." But this statement, einenu shom'im elecha, we won't listen to you. We believe that you're speaking in the name of Hashem. We just don't care. In the time of Yoshiyahu, they didn't deny. They don't, unlike in the time of Yoshiyahu, they don't deny. They don't pretend. They don't hide their idols behind doors. And they don't make excuses for themselves. They just ignore. Einenu shom'im elecha. What a far cry from two prakim ago where they promised him these words that they would listen to anything he would say, no matter what. And instead, probably as some type of defense mechanism, they begin to create their own narrative of what happened to them. These people are not false prophets. They do not claim that they heard this alternative narrative from God. They just deny God completely. And listen what they say. In verse 17, Ki asana said kol davar asher yatzah mipinu lekater lemelechet hashamayim veisichla nesachim kasher asinu anachnu vavotenu malkenu v'sarenu barei Yehuda v'chutzot Yerushalayim v'nispal lechem v'niya tovim v'ra'al lo ra'inu. They say to Yirmiyahu, it's true. We did worship idols all over in Jerusalem. We did. And you know what? We had a pretty good life then. We had bread. We were full. We had a decent and secure life. Umin az, and from the time chadalnu, lekaterem limlechad hashamayim vasechla nisachim, From the time where we stopped worshipping these idols, chasarnu kol, we lost everything. V'cherev ubara tamnu, we were hurt by the sword and by the famine. They look back on their history and they say, wait a second, the time where we worship the most idols, the time of Menashe and the beginning of Yoshio's time, you know what? That was a relatively secure time compared to now. Yes, Menashe was captured by the Assyrians, but he was returned. And you know what? Our country was relatively okay. We worshiped a lot of idols in the time of Yoshio. And you know what? We were a lot better off. And maybe the reason why everything went bad for us in our country is because we stopped worshiping idols. Maybe idols are real and Hashem's not real. Maybe the idols were angry at us and that's why they turned on us and that's why we were destroyed. So we're not listening to you anymore, Yirmiyahu. We're not just denying you. We're denying your entire narrative. We're not denying that you're from Hashem. We're denying Hashem. It's very hard to combat this type of thinking. Can Yirmiyahu prove them wrong? It is true that if you use their narrative, things did get worse after Yoshio took away the idols, eventually. On the other hand, they had terrible kings, Yehoiakim and Tzidkiyahu, who were corrupt or incredibly weak and didn't stop corruption. And they never fixed their society. And they're not looking at their ethics. And they're not looking at the way they treated the widows and orphans. Because again, under an idolatrous society, you can treat anyone however you want. All that matters is your ritual. And that's why it was so attractive. And now the women chime in. And they're not embarrassed either in verse 19. Ki anachnu mekatrim l'melechat ha-shamayim u'la'aseich la'nisachim ha-mibeladei anashenu asinu la kavanim. They say, oh, Yirmiyahu, you keep blaming us, the women. You think our husbands don't know about it? You think they're not on board with our idolatry? We're all idol worshippers now, and we're not embarrassed. Yirmiyahu stupefied. Throughout his whole career, he never had people blatantly admit their idol worship to his face. People who would deny Hashem's presence completely. Who had no shame at all. But this is what happened to the community in Egypt. And it was just as he feared it would be. This is not a group of Jews being led by a Jewish king and surrounded by prophets and the Beit HaMikdash who are sinning. And yet they still have all these markers of their Judaism around us. These Jews have come, lagur be'eretz Mitzrayim, to live in the land of Egypt. They found a different home. And a different way of life, and they are no longer embarrassed of what they do. They have no need for Yirmiyahu or his message whatsoever. They do not pine for their lost home in Judea, nor do they care about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash anymore. They found a new way of life with new people. They've built a new home. All Yirmiyahu can say to them is wait. Verse 27. Hinani shoked aleihem l'ra'ah v'lo l'tovah. V'tamu kol ish Yudah asher be'aretz Mitzrayim b'cherev u'barav ad kalotam. Says Yirmiyahu, I am watching you, and I am watching you very carefully, and I am watching you for bad, not for good. And you are leading towards your own destruction. Everyone is going to face their own end, either by sword or by famine, until they are completely destroyed. That word, shokade, is a significant word in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu goes back to the makel shokade, the olive branch of his first nevuah, where Hashem promised him, ki shokade ani al divarai la'asot. I will watch my words carefully. I will surely carry out my words. We didn't know then, when we read it, what the words would be that Hashem would carry out surely. Destruction, rebuilding, the chosenness of Yirmiyahu. Now, after learning most of the Sefer, in Yirmiyahu's last message to the Jewish people, we know the answer. The words were, whatever words they chose it to be, those were the words that Hashem would fulfill. It was one of the first lessons that Yirmiyahu learned in the potter's house. The clay is in your hands. Hashem has given you power over your own destiny. Now, finally, the circle is closed. The words that Hashem will carefully bring about are the words of destruction, because the people no longer care to do anything about it. And now we also understand why we fast on Tzom Gedalia. Part of it is because it was an assassination of a Jewish leader, but that's only part of it. The second part is because where it led. Tzom, the assassination of Gedalia led to the last remnant of Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael choose the land of Egypt over the land of Israel, choose the way of idolatry over the way of Hashem, choose to disregard the Churban. And that's where we went after the death of Gedalia. Of the four fasts of the Beit HaMikdash, three of them we are sad because of Churban. Asar B'Tevet, we fast about the siege. Shavasar B'Tammuz, we fast about the breaking down of the walls. And Tisha B'Av, we fast over the Churban. But Tzom Gedalia, we fast about Galut. We fast about an Israel that's empty of its Jewish people, not because they had to, but because they chose to. Yirmiyahu ends with something he has not done throughout his entire career. He gives the people a sign. He says to them in verse 29, "Vezot lachem ha'ot, this is a sign for you, Ne'um Hashem. Ki poked ani aleichem b'makom hazeh. Laman teidu ki kom yakumu devarai aleichem l'ra'ah. I am telling you that I am watching you in this place. I have my eye is on this place. It is poked. It is an appointed place, but it's appointed for bad. You will know that bad things will come to you. My words will come, and they will be wrong, and they will be bad for you." Even though Yirmiyahu was accused right and left of being a false prophet, he never proved himself with a sign. He knows signs don't really work. They don't really cause lasting change. Think of Eliyahu on Har Carmel, or the sign that Yeshayahu offers Achaz. No one changes because of a sign. No one changes their actions because of a miracle. But Yirmiyahu is leaving the community now, the community that has rejected him and Hashem at every turn, and now has offered him their strongest and most vehement rejection. So he leaves them with a sign, and maybe they'll think of him after he's gone. Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, Ko amar Hashem, hineni notein et paro chafra melch Mitzrayim biyad oivav uviyad mevakshei nafsho. Kasher natati et tzidkiyahu melch Yuda biyad nevuchad retzar melch bavel oivo umevakesh nafsho. The sign is that Paro, who you look up to as your stable leader, the Egyptian society that you've enveloped yourselves in, that you're obsessed with, that Paro is going to be captured by Nebuchadnezzar, just like he captured Tzidkiyahu, the king of Judea. And with that, Yirmiyahu ends his speech to the Jewish people. We don't know where he goes next. Maybe he stays alone in Egypt. Maybe he travels to Babylonia, stopping at the ruins of the Beit HaMikdash. Maybe he goes into seclusion. In the rabbinic tradition, it is Baruch ben Neria who makes his way to Babylonia and becomes the teacher of the great Ezra HaSofer, cementing the bond between the age of the prophets and the age of the sages. Ezra, for his part, begins his book quoting a prophecy of Yirmiyahu. While the historical authenticity of this midrash is complicated, the midrash moves us to think of Yirmiyahu not in his devastating end, but in terms of the influence he had on generations to come. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Zvi Yosef.